May 31st, 2011, it's a Watt from Pedro show.
We'll be right back.
From Pedro Show, deja vu all over again. For you people sequestered from the reality of the dealio here.
You missed it.
Yeah, you missed it. No, it was sunny day in Pedro, Tuesday. Joining me and Brother Matt is Brother Twan.
Hey now.
In town from Marina Del Rey. Diggs, how long have you been there? A few months now.
Since December. Yeah, I'm just house-sitting for a buddy of mine. Yeah, he's been in China. They're making the movie, the book into a movie, Life of Pi. You know the book?
Right.
The guy that goes
out
there.
I didn't read that one, but I read the sequel, which was called Virgil and Beatrice. It was weird.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie. I mean, what they've been trying to do.
It was about a cat and a boat.
Yeah. The animals. And tigers and stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know how they pulled this up, but they've been shooting for months and months. He's coming back on the 10th, and I'll probably end up back in Pedro.
Okay. I know he had the guy who wrote it. God, what's his name?
Yeah,
I can't think of it either.
Away.
Martel Yar. Something with a Y, Martel. Or fucking Alzheimer. Well, I should tell you that we started the show off with John Coltrane, along with Duke Ellington, doing Take the Coltrane. And then, it being the last day of May, we played Blue Oyster Cult, something live from, I think, 1975. Then came the last days of May. And that's for you, Skipper Jeff, because we know about you and
your pride at Cucamonga.
Yeah, and your hankering for the BOC.
Yeah.
And, we were talking about... Brother Matt's actually sailed on Pride of Cucamonga, Skipper Jeff's sailboat.
Yeah, a couple times.
And I've done an edition of the show there on the boat, but it was tied up in the marina, so we just bobbed.
We've got to set sail.
But we got to set sail, yeah. Maybe go under in the little cabin so the wind don't wail on us. But that would be a righteous thing.
Very cool thing. I think he sailed over to Catalina this Memorial Day weekend, I believe.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
Jan Martel, that was the Life of Pi's dude name.
Jan Martel.
Yeah.
So I was kind of there.
Yeah,
close.
I know it was a big, heavy thing for him because he had such a success with his book, Brother Twan's talking about, Life of Pi.
Yeah.
That big pressure for this
follow-up sequel,
right? Or not sequel, but just round two. And I think it took him 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the story is kind of this dilemma. And what he wanted to write about, he said, starts off in the book, is Holocaust. And like, no publisher, you know, this is not a happening subject. People don't want a book on this. But he wanted to write about it somehow. And the story ends up being, it was called Beatrice and Virgil. Now, I got it in the airport because Beatrice and Virgil are two of the characters in the Divine Comedy. Turns out they're the name of a stuffed donkey and a baboon in this story. And there's like hardly anything about Dante or the Divine Comedy. Yeah, I don't want to give too much away, but I remember I gave it to Brother Sam and he found it disturbing. I mean, it is a disturbing book, but in a way... Have you ever read things like this? Like, God damn, man, this gave me weird thoughts. But then you think, maybe it's still good I read it.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Stretch out the envelope. That P was real cool.
Man, it's a sick fucking story. And it's not that long. It's like that other one. Kind of comes on like a children book in a way.
But to make it into a movie, and a 3D movie, it's just like a nightmare. They built this gigantic tank where they can control the weather.
He's at sea,
so they made it. It's bigger than the football field. They had to build it from scratch in Taiwan, and they can make Category 5 waves. It's all controlled. Completely insane. Jeff has been sending photos.
He said the crew got seasick and stuff because they're stationed on the boat the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
In the pool. Pond, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well, it's a big ass pool.
Yeah.
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 Station all day. A little rat.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, and all the cats making up the things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Make a person has to float on over there.
Yeah, exactly. It's nuts.
Wow.
But they've been filming since December. Usually a feature film, they'll take 2 to maybe 4 months. To shoot, like, to do all the filming, the actual filming with the actors. This one had, right from the starting gate, had a 7-month shooting schedule. That's, like, fucking insane.
And that's only set.
No, it's not the only one. But they spent, like, 3 of those 7 months In that tank.
In the tank.
Yeah.
Yeah, starts off, he lives in a zoo. His dad's selling the zoo off. They're going to move to Seattle, and the freighter sinks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I heard that there's a tiger that eats everything.
Yeah.
And then the dilemma is, how am I going to keep this guy
yeah.
from
Yeah.
Right.
So he kicks into his... He remembers tiger training, like tiger in a circus, so he uses these little
from his family's
and, yeah.
work.
Yeah, oh. tiger mm-hmm. trainer tricks.
Should be interesting. We'll see.
Wow.
Ang Lee's a director. He's done some really good work.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. right. Yeah. Did he do the Memories of a Geisha? Was that him?
No, that's not him. I think, I want to say it's Bob Fosse, but I could be wrong. But that's a good film, Memories of a Geisha. No, he did, like, I think more recently, a movie called Lust, Caution.
He did Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, he did Brokeback Mountain.
Of course, I could never get. I mean, yeah. what's wrong with me?
Yeah. yeah. Well, he's a gay cat, you know? I dig him.
But, okay, one of these reasons why 2 months max for a big one here mm-hmm. is the monies, right?
Yeah.
Well, so maybe money. It's cheaper doing the stuff over there?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's strange. I mean, they have big tanks, like water tanks, in the United States that they could have used. But I think Ang Lee wanted to, he's from Taiwan.
Yeah.
Or from Hong Kong or somewhere in that region, and I think he just wanted to film down in the homeland. And now his career is such that he can pretty much call the shots. So
shot
he's caller. Got right. So he says, "Here's what I want to do, and yeah. here's where I want to do it." Any
that
questions?
Could be so yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, good for him.
Did you work for him?
I think I have a long time ago on some small projects or music videos or something, but I've worked with so many people over the years I can't remember.
Well, you mean he did music visit?
Yeah, and a lot of these guys they do commercials. I mean,
well, Kay told me that a lot of the new directors come from commercial.
Well,
world.
not just new directors like Martin Scorsese. Commercials you see on TV today may have been directed by Martin Scorsese. The Coen brothers. In fact, the guy whose house I'm house sitting at, who's doing this movie in China right now. He was one of the grips on the Coen brothers, not their movies, but on their commercials. And, I mean, like big commercials, like for Honda, you know, car
sure,
commercials.
Sure.
But you, the viewer, doesn't know that some famous director did that commercial when you're seeing it. So they almost all do it because ultimately they're all whores and the money is really good. They don't want to do it. They want to say no, but when they see what they're offering, they can't say no.
Oh, so you're talking about later in the game.
Yeah.
Not like a starting off, not
no.
like a prep school thing.
Like right now, Martin Scorsese, he could be directing a commercial right now as we speak. Yeah. You know, he doesn't need to, but the money these guys get paid is so insane.
Well, once they have a name, maybe that gives more
yeah.
credibility
Absolutely.
To your commercial.
Yeah.
But I was thinking of it more like a farm
yeah.
league.
Well, there's some of that, too, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Kay was telling me.
Yeah, about. Yeah.
They like... This is where they're recruiting
yeah.
these guys.
Well, they did a lot of that in music video, too, like Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Who, you know, I don't really like Michael's movies, big action movies, but, you know, like the Transformers movies, that whole franchise. That's all Michael Bay. I used to work with him in the early and mid-80s on music videos. And he was a screamer, just a real hard man to work for. And then in later years, I worked with him on like Armageddon, that Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah.
I worked on the effects crew, and he would show up every now and then. Usually the effects department gets left alone, and then the director shows up every now and then. And it'd be a big dog and pony show. But he started out as just some nobody music video director. Another good one is Spike Jonze, who's actually a super cool guy. And
I know Spike. He's a buddy of mine.
Yeah, Spike's great.
But if you think about it, music videos are commercials.
Right, they sure are. And they're done, not doing them that much anymore. But this was back in the day. When
they don't do them much anymore.
Right.
I just saw a 20-minute one that Adam Yap did.
Did you see the one?
Did you see this one?
The one with the Beastie Boys?
Yeah,
Brother
yeah.
Matt showed it to me. It's so funny. It's classic.
Actually, there's two groups of cats from
yeah,
the
future.
Right, right.
Yeah, Will Ferrell and Jack Black.
It's so good. All-star cast, man. All-star
yeah,
cast.
Yeah, superstars in that thing. All kinds of superstars.
The blue eye. He looks a little like Ad-Rock, a little bit.
Seth Rogen? Oh, no. Is it Vince Vaughn?
Elijah.
Yeah.
Elijah Wood, yeah.
He looks a little bit.
Yeah.
The other cats
don't look. No, not at all.
That's part of the joke, though. That's a really well done
movie. I know. Right? And then at the end when they start pissing on you.
Oh, God.
He's talking about pissing.
Yeah.
You know, and then here comes the real big
crazy piss
with
fight.
With the sticks and beating them in the cop
seats. It's great.
Big beards.
Yeah. It's classic.
You ever see cops
with the big ears, right?
That was really good.
Yeah, that's funny.
It was right after my tour, the day after I came back from the U.S. Canada tour, and Adam wrote me an email, hey, I want you to see this thing I made, and it was at the Egyptian.
Yeah, he directed it, yeah.
And wrote it and produced it, the whole dealio.
Yeah. Man, how did he get all that? I mean, he had all-star
stars, yeah.
It's like, I mean, Tom Cruise is in that, Susan Sarandon. I can't even think of
all
that.
Yeah,
I mean,
so many,
it's like every character that shows up is like a major Hollywood star. It's like,
anybody would asked would want to be in it.
I suppose. Maybe, you know. Big fans, you know.
I know Mike D. Married to Tamara, and she was a director later.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some connections. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I didn't recognize a lot of. Maybe they were wearing makeup and stuff.
Yeah.
But I thought he did great.
Yeah,
that
was very
it's
cool.
All riffing on that song they did when they were young. Fight to your party.
You got to fight for your right to party. Yeah, yeah. Was that off Paul's Boutique? That was a great, great disc. It was earlier than that, I think. Right.
License
to Ill.
Yeah.
Yeah. License to Ill.
Yeah. Paul's Boutique.
I worked with them too
years
ago. I did one of their music videos. It was for Check Your Head.
That's a great album. I got to open up for them on a tour leg of that tour.
Yeah.
It's when they start playing their stuff.
Yeah. Mm. They had a studio out in like Atwater Village in Glendale.
That's right.
Yeah, that's where we filmed it. Yeah, and
the
skateboard ramp inside. Yeah,
the Bubba Plumber shop.
Right, exactly. That's where we filmed it.
I recorded with Perry there, "Satellite of Love," the Lou Reed song.
Oh, yeah.
For, I think it was Carrie.
Yeah.
Cable guy.
Drew. Not Drew Carey. What's his name?
No. Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey. Yeah.
And he asked Porno for Pyro to do this song, and it was this trippy ass version of "Satellite of Love." Speaking of which, we should play some music. You know who we lost this week?
Tell me.
Little Scott Heron.
Oh yeah, I know.
So,
he's like the original of the grandfather rapper, man.
Yeah.
He would always try to. He would reject that notion.
The last album's a little before him, but not much.
Uh-huh.
He's right on there.
Yeah.
So I got some spiel where he gave a little talk and he does his famous.
Well,
everybody knows it about what is not going to be televised. Because it will be live.
Yeah.
The revolution.
Certain people, though, have contributed such a great deal to the blues and to my understanding of it that I have named particular poems after them and particular phases of the blues after them. Like Joe Williams always sounded like a horn when he was doing them big city, big band blues. So I had the Joe Williams blues down, which was big band sound. Going to Chicago, sorry, but I can't take you. Do 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 do. Yeah, write that down, Joe Williams. Yeah, and then like on the other end of that spectrum, I had like the Jimmy Reed blues. Jimmy Reed got you into geometry, you see, because he delivered his blues from an angle. And Jimmy Reed's blues would be something like, bright lights and big cities done gone to my baby's head. Yeah, Jimmy Reed, you see, like about four doubles into the evening, Jimmy Reed became a genius. Soon as you got right here, you say, yeah, play that again. That's something that sounds like the right. This is how Jimmy Reed is the hero of everybody who stays up from 1 o'clock on. Because his stuff started to make more and more sense around closing time. And with all the different kinds of blues I was getting into, I started to do some research on it. Because the more I heard and the more I checked it out, the more I wanted to know. So I found out that a lot of poets had worked on different phases of the blues back during the Harlem Renaissance. Langston Hughes, County Cullen, Claude McKay, Sterling Brown, Gene Toomer. These people were blues poets. And they polished this art form to the degree of that it became scientific in its approach. And the more research I did, the more I found it that there was a 200-year legacy of poetry that had been fashioned along ideas that correlated with the blues. It went back from 1789, that chronicled our life and our life experiences here in this country. And the more I found out about our own history, the more I was disappointed about how little we had been informed of our history. So it made me want to put a poem together to explain what had been overlooked. And the poem was called Black History. It said, I was wondering about our yesterdays and started digging through the rubble. And to say the least, somebody went to a hell of a lot of trouble to make sure that when we looked things up, we wouldn't fare too well. And we would come up with totally unreliable portraits of ourselves. But I compiled what few facts I could, I mean, such as they are, to see if we could shed a little bit of light. And this is what I got so far. First, white folks discovered Africa. And they claimed it fair and square. Cecil Rhodes couldn't have been robbing nobody because, hell, he said wasn't nobody there. White folks brought all the civilization. They say wasn't none around. Because how could these folks over here be civilized when they didn't see nobody writing nothing down? And just to prove all their suspicions, well, it didn't take too long. They found out there were whole groups of people in plain sight running around without much clothes on. That's right. There was women and men and young folks and old folks. Well, righteous folks just covered their eyes. And no time was spent considering the environment. They just said, hell no, this here, this ain't civilized. And another way they knew the folks was backwards, or at least this is how we were taught, is that unlike the very civilized people of Europe, these black groups actually fought. And yes, there was some crude implements, and yes, they had primitive art, and yes, they were masters of hunting and fishing, and courtesy came from the heart. And yes, there was love and medicine, religion, intertribal communication by drum. But no papers and pencils and other utensils. And hell, these folks never even heard of a gun. So this is why the colonies came to stabilize the land. The dark continent had copper and gold, and the discoverers had themselves a plan. They would discover all the places with promise. You didn't need no titles and deeds. And then you would appoint people to make everything legal, to sanction the trickery and the greed. And back in the jungle, if the natives got restless, well, you call that guerrilla attack. And you never described that some folks might have got wise and decided that they was going to fight back. But still, we are victims of word games. Semantics is always a bitch. Places once called underdeveloped and backwards, they now call them mineral rich. But still, it seems like the game goes on with unity just beyond our reach. Libya and Egypt used to be in Africa. They've been moved to the Middle East. There are examples galore, I assure you. But if interpreting was left up to me, I'd be sure every time folks knew this version wasn't mine, which is why it is called His Story. Black History. Thank you very much. Thank you. You see, how we see things and how we relate to it becomes very important. Like, as it was in terms of history, so it is in terms of right now. Like, you see, when I go to see the movies and what have you, I be careful about who I be identifying with. For example, like, when I went to see Jaws, I was for Jaws. But Jaws was the home team. Some bitch was in the water, which is where he's supposed to have been. You see? I'm saying, now if Jaws was to come in here, I would be with you grabbing something trying to beat this some bitch back. But Jaws was in the water. This is where sharks are known to be, in the water. You going to the beach, he going to the supermarket. But see, something like that, it just show you why you can't hardly have no black people in no horror movies. Because as soon as they found out Jaws was in the water, black people said, no, I'm not going in the water. Jaws is in the water. See, I mean, that's the whole thing about it. That, like, Jaws couldn't catch no black people because we can hear the music. Yeah, here come that goddamn shark with his band. You see, like the idea about how effective or how thoroughly dominant television, for example. See, television, like a lot of black people watch television because they think it's free. See, my grandmother used to say, anything I got to watch is dangerous. And then, of course, there's that old ode to paranoia. I thought I was watching TV, and it turned out the TV was watching me. See, they got these machines nowadays where you can call people and turn it on a certain station, and if they got the same kind of hookup you can see them, they can see you on the television set. What makes you think you have to call somebody? See, the whole idea became how indelible these marks were going to be on our community and on the way we have dealt with things. We started to look up certain aspects of our history to find out how bluesology, the science, had been mastered and brought to this point. And we started to look at certain aspects of the media as being responsible. We wrote a poem that went like this. You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. You see, a lot of times people see battles and skirmishes on TV and they say, aha, the revolution is being televised. Nah, the results of the revolution are being televised. The first revolution is when you change your mind about how you look at things. And see that there might be another way to look at it that you have not been shown. What you see later on is the results of that, but the revolution, that change that takes place, will not be televised. It will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. It will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater or Miller Lite, starring Natalie Wood and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not be televised. Revolution will not be right back after a message about white lightning, white tornadoes, or white people. You will not have to worry about the dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look like you lost 5 pounds. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on reports from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Tom Jones, Glenn Campbell, Johnny Cash, or Engelbert Humperdinck, nor none of the other little Humperdincks, should there be any. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, and be no rerun, brothers and sisters. The revolution will be live.
Watt from Pedro show. Yeah, that was Gil Scott-Heron with the talk on bluesology, etc. And he will be missed. But his impact was big time, so in a way his art will go through the culture and not be extinguished.
Yeah.
Even whether cats know it or not, he big impact.
Yeah, he left a mark.
Him and people like Last Poets were like, whoa. They were like so intense on the word.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want the distraction of band and music.
Right.
It was intense, and the rhythm of the voice.
Yeah.
And your verse, A Voice of Choice, Go Team, and the Jade Beach by Joaquin A. I came from, before yesterday, came from England. I did the first Stooges gig for the summer.
Yeah.
This is what they do, is festivals over there.
Uh-huh.
But it was just one. Usually they're like blocks of four or five.
Uh-huh.
And this was in Newcastle, which is in the northeast part of England, about 60 miles from Scotland. And I hadn't played there in 20 years.
What was the festival?
It was called the Evolution Festival.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
It was right by the river. It's on the Tyne, Newcastle upon the Tyne.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they call a Peter there a key.
Oh.
And they spell it Q-U-A-Y.
A-Y, yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
They do that in Canada, too.
Well, probably from the England influence there.
Yeah.
Have you ever been, you've been to Vancouver?
Yeah, yeah. I lived up there a couple times over the last few years.
Well, you know about the Peace Arch?
Yeah.
There's an arch right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Blaine. Mm-hmm. I think Douglas is the Canada side. Blaine's the U.S. side.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, of a common mother on their side.
Mm-hmm.
Our side has some other kind of...
Don't tread on me.
Yeah, something like that. Separated at birth. Anyway, the gig was pretty wild. There was a 93 dB limit, so it's got a little
tinier than normal.
You know what
Pillsbury Doughboy.
What do you normally play at? Do you know?
As far as the shit goes.
But Europe more and more is getting more restrictive on these noise kind of things, which is trippy for that band. But and it was cold. You know,
is it hard for you to play, like, when you first hit the stage and it's fucking cold out? I mean, do you spend a lot of time warming up?
Yeah, well, I was playing outside a little to get used to it, so it would be a big shot.
Yeah.
There's lights that keep you kind of warm.
Right.
But they kept going out. The generator kept tripping, so they had to... but it was a good gig. We hadn't played since the gig Brother Matt was at in Ann Arbor. So there wasn't clamless.
Uh-huh.
But we never, the keel never came out of the water all the way. So for a cherry gig for the season, the Stooges festival season in Europe, but it was a good one. We stayed at some castle, this hotel. They turned this castle from, it was built in 1395. Lumley Castle, this guy, Sir Ralph Lumley, built it. 5 years later, picked the wrong side in a rebellion. Shakespeare writes about it in Richard II with Gloucester. Richard II. Yeah. Anyway, guy's head cut off, so he didn't get to live in it a long time. I think they gave it to the Earl of Scarborough or something. But here it is, you know. Now, I was in a room that was from the stables at... courtyard kind of thing that was added in the 1700s, but man, there were some oldage. That was a trip. And I was looking later when I got home, and yeah, there's supposed to be ghosts and hauntedness and kind of stuff, but
no sign.
It was okay. It was windy and it rained for a while. Luckily, when we played, last time I played there, it was a club called the Riverside. Man, it was cold and wet. I remember Newcastle people are, what did he call it? He called it the Bricks. You know, this was a town like a tough town.
Uh-huh.
And I was telling you before, the Animals are from there. Eric Burton.
Oh, right, right.
And you can tell them their music is kind of, yeah, no silver spoon town. So,
But he still didn't need a shirt to battle the cold.
Yeah, Ed was out there with no shirt, man. He said when he was out there with the folks, it was a little cold, so he'd run back up on the stage. And his thing is so wild. He also told his tutor, "No, nobody's going to come up." Yeah, sure
no
enough, Jacob Peel came. He brought him up. He can't. can't resist. You know, I don't blame him. Right before I left, saw Motoko Honda. In fact, right before we did this last show.
Right.
With Leo Smith. She gave me a new album she did with Emily May, a flautist, and Brad Dutz. And he's a percussion man. And Mr. Wayne Pete recorded an organ player. He's even on a couple tunes. Who's a good friend of Nell's client. So ain't that a trip. I mean, the gig was that. Did it tell you about the
house?
Gig?
Yeah, all kinds of jazz masters, autographed pictures.
This lady, Miss Mimi, man, what a patron. Respect. So we're going to hear something new from, they call this unit the Polarity Taskmasters.
Ramatoko. Thank you.
Hot from Pedro Show. That was Polarity Taskmasters with Cooler Than My Wife on a new album. Just out. I got Rock Split Open on the cover there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Big Rock.
Yeah, Big Rock. Kind of Oceanside thing.
That's not.
Float the anchor, sink the anchor. We'll play Joshua more stuff for future shows.
Yeah. The Joshua Tree Rock?
This is where we were. This is right by the
Jesus.
Check it out. I'll show you.
It's by what?
Joshua Tree.
It's right near Joshua Tree. Yeah. And there's this place, there's this dome.
So it's in the desert?
Yeah.
It's not in the ocean. Okay.
No, it's not. It's crazy. I was just there last weekend.
What's the chances of that?
It's crazy. Yeah.
Come on.
Right?
The connector.
You never know.
The resin, the catalyst.
You check it out.
You got it on your bone phone?
Check it out. There's one right there.
Oh, there's wow.
There it is. That's on the other side. That broken out piece is on the back side. I don't get any shots from
it. What's this called?
It's called Giant Rock.
Makes sense.
So, yeah.
And here's where I was at this place right here.
Were you at the festival with Brother Matt?
Yeah, see, this is the Integratron. It's this dome that was built in 1949 by this government scientist who went bonkers.
Yeah.
And he started claiming that the aliens were communicating with him and told him to build this place as a place for them to all communicate. So it's been there. It's all made out of wood. There's no metal or nails. And they and they just put it together with glue. It's really an amazing place.
Integratron.
Yeah.
Integratron.
Yeah.
What, like integrity?
You go get a sound bath there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Straighten out your shop.
Wow.
And yeah, it's hard to.
Okay, I got to look at that. And then this is Joshua Tree.
Yeah, it's actually Landers is where it's at.
That's the name of the town?
Okay. Yeah, which is like the meth capital of the world, I'm told.
We got some new tunes from We Have a Meth Lab. We're
going to right, play right.
next hour.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, speaking of which, we're at the end of the first hour, May 31st, 2011, last day of May.
Yeah.
Our From Pedro show, hang tight for hour two. May 31st, 2011, it's the second hour of the Watt From Pedro show.
Less delicate than the locust. Balls, he said, I'm tired of painting. Let's go out. I'm tired of the stink of oils. I'm tired of being great. I'm tired of waiting to die. Let's go out. Go out where? She asked. Anywhere. Eat, drink, see. Jorg, she said, what will I do when you die? You will eat, sleep, fuck, piss, shit, clothe yourself, walk around and bitch. I need security. We all do. I mean, we're not married. I won't even be able to collect your insurance. That's all right. Don't worry about it. Besides, you don't believe in marriage, Arlene. Arlene was sitting in a pink chair reading the afternoon newspaper. You say 5,000 women want to sleep with you. Where does that leave me? 5,001. You think I can't get another man? No, there's no problem for you. You can get another man in 3 minutes. You think I need a great painter? No, you don't. A good plumber would do. Yes, as long as he loved me. Of course. Put on your coat. Let's go out. They came down the stairway from the top loft. All around were cheap, roach-filled rooms. But nobody seemed to be starving. They always seemed to be cooking things in large pots and sitting around, smoking, cleaning their fingernails, drinking cans of beer, or sharing a tall blue bottle of white wine, screaming at each other, or laughing, or farting, belching, scratching, or asleep in front of the TV. Not many people in the world had very much money. But the less money they had, the better they seemed to live. Sleep, clean sheets, food, drink, and hemorrhoid ointment were their only needs. And they always left their doors a bit open. Fools, said Jorg as they walked down the stairway. They twaddle away their lives and clutter up mine. Oh, Jorg, Arlene sighed, you just don't like people, do you? Jorg arced an eyebrow at her, didn't answer. Arlene's response to his feelings for the masses was always the same, as if not loving people revealed an unforgiving shortcoming of soul. But she was an excellent fuck and pleasant to have around most of the time. They reached the boulevard and walked along. Jorg with his red and white beard and broken yellow teeth and bad breath. Purple ears, frightened eyes, stinking torn overcoat, and white ivory cane. When he felt worst, he felt best. Shit, he said. Everything shits until it dies. Arlene bobbled her ass, making no secret of it, and Jorg pounded the pavement with his cane, and even the sun looked down and said, ho, ho. Finally, they reached the old dingy building where Sergei lived. Jorg and Sergei had both been painting for many years, but it was not until recently that their work sold for more than pig farts. They had starved together. Now they were getting famous separately. Jorg and Arlene entered the hotel and began climbing the stairway. The smell of iodine and frying chicken was in the halls. In one room, somebody was getting fucked and making no secret of it. They climbed to the top loft and Arlene knocked. The door popped open and there was Sergei. Peekaboo, he said. Then he blushed. Oh, sorry, come in. What the hell's the matter with you? Asked Jorg. Sit down. I thought it was Lila. You play peekaboo with Lila? It's nothing. Sergey, you've got to get rid of that girl. She's destroying your mind. She sharpens my pencils. Sergey, she's too young for you. She's 30. And you're 60. That's 30 years. 30 years is too much, of course. How about 20, asked Sergey, looking at Arlene. 20 years is acceptable. 30 years is obscene. Why don't you both get women your own age, asked Arlene. They both looked at her. She likes to make little jokes, said Georg. Yes, said Sergey, she is funny. Come on, look, I'll show you what I'm doing. They followed him into the bedroom. He took off his shoes and lay flat on the bed. See, like this, all the comforts. Sergey had his paintbrushes on long handles, and he painted on a canvas fastened to the ceiling. It's my back. Can't paint 10 minutes without stopping. This way I can go on for hours. Who mixes your colors? Lila, I tell her. Stick it in the blue, now a bit of green. She's quite good. Eventually I might even let her work the brushes too. I'll just lay around and read magazines. Then they heard Lila coming up the stairway. She opened the door, came across the front room, and entered the bedroom. Hey, she said, I see the old fuck's painting. Yeah, said Georg, he claims you hurt his back. I said no such thing. Let's go out and eat, said Arlene. Sergey moaned and got up. Honest to Christ, said Lila, he just lays around like a sick frog most of the time. I need a drink, said Sergey. I'll snap back. They went down the street together and moved toward the Sheep's Tick. Two young men in their mid-20s ran up. They had on turtleneck sweaters. Hey, you guys are the painters, Georg Swenson and Sergey Morrow. Get the hell out of the way, said Sergey. Georg swung his ivory cane. He got the shorter of the young man right on the knee. Shit, said the young man, you've broken my leg. I hope so, said Georg, maybe you'll learn some damn civility. They moved on toward the Sheep's Tick. As they entered, a buzzing arose from the diners. The head waiter immediately rushed up, bowing and waving menus and speaking endearments in Italian, French, and Russian. Look at that long black hair at his nostrils, said Sergey. Truly sickening. Yes, said Georg, and then he shouted at the waiter. Hide your nose! 5 bottles of your best wine, screamed Sergey as they sat down at the best table. The head waiter vanished. You two are real assholes, said Lila. Georg ran his hand up her leg. Two living immortals are allowed certain indiscretions. Get your hand off my pussy, Georg. It's not your pussy, it's Sergey's pussy. Get your hand off Sergey's pussy or I'll scream. My will is weak. She screamed. Georg removed his hand. The head waiter came toward them with a wagon and bucket of chilled wine. He rolled it up, bowed, and pulled one cork. He filled Georg's glass. Georg drained it. It's shit, but okay. Open the bottles. All the bottles? All the bottles, asshole, and be quick about it. He's clumsy, said Sergey. Look at him. Shall we dine? Dine, said Arlene. All you guys do is drink. I don't think I've seen either of you eat more than a soft-boiled egg. Get out of my sight, coward, Sergey said to the waiter. The head waiter vanished. You guys shouldn't talk to people that way, said Lila. We've paid our dues, said Sergey. You've got no right, said Arlene. I suppose not, said Georg, but it's interesting. People don't have to take that crap, said Lila. People accept what they accept, said Georg. They accept far worse. It's your paintings they want, that's all, said Arlene. We are our paintings, said Sergey. Women are stupid, said Georg. Be careful, said Sergei. They are also capable of terrible acts of vengeance. They sat for a couple hours drinking the wine. Man is less delicate than the locust, said Georg finally. Man is the sewer of the universe, said Sergei. You guys are really assholes, said Lila. Sure are, said Arlene. Let's switch tonight, said Georg. I'll fuck your pussy and you fuck mine. Oh, no, said Arlene, none of that. Right, said Lila. I feel like painting now, said Georg. I'm bored with drinking. I feel like painting, too, said Sergei. Let's get out of here, said Georg. Listen, said Lila, you guys haven't paid the bill yet. Bill, screamed Sergei. You don't think we're going to pay money for this rot gut? Let's go, said Georg. As they rose, the head waiter came up with the bill. This rot gut stinks, screamed Sergei, jumping up and down. I would never ask anyone to pay for stuff like this. I want you to know the proof is in the piss. Sergei grabbed a half bottle of the wine, ripped open the waiter's shirt, and poured the wine over his chest. Georg held his ivory cane like a sword. The head waiter looked confused. He was a beautiful young man with long fingernails and an expensive apartment. He was studying chemistry and once won second prize in an opera competition. Georg swung his cane and caught the waiter hard, just below the left ear. The waiter turned very white and swayed. Georg hit him three times more in the same spot, and he dropped. They walked out together, Sergei, Georg, Lila, and Arlene. They were all drunk, but there was a certain stature about them, something unique. They got out the door and went down the street. A young couple seated at a table near the door had watched the entire proceedings. The young man looked intelligent. Only a large mole near the end of his nose marred the effect. His girl was fat but lovable in a dark blue dress. She had once wanted to be a nun. Weren't they magnificent? Asked the young man. They were assholes, said the girl. The young man waved for a third bottle of wine. It was going to be another difficult night. Thank you.
Thank you. standing. What are you taking up about, shut up, Pillman? Or where you slept last night?
Pedro show started off second hour with some former Pedro. Well, no, he's permanent Pedro resident, Charles Bukowski.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Right. The last 14 years living here, but yeah. He's supplanted in Green Hills.
Yeah,
or D. Boone is.
Yeah, permanent. Yeah,
resident. Less delicate than the locust. Some spiel from him. Great stuff. Scotty's son, Stooges drummer, told me he's on a Bukowski kick. He's reading all kinds of
stuff. Oh, cool.
Loves it. And we heard Rot Gruen Tot by Der Plan. And I think that means Red Green Death. This is a Dusseldorf band from the late 70s. Great band. Kind of in the tradition of Kraftwerk, like younger guys who were influenced by them back in those days. I remember getting that record, man. It was a trippy. It was like I had like kind of a nativity scene, old styly Middle Ages painting, but the baby's like a little robot, you know, sort of drawn in there. And yeah, it was a trip. And they're on the back. There's three guys in the band, and they're dressed as clowns, you know, like togas, like red togas. Yeah, it was very trip, bizarre. Great band though, man. That's when you got a punk record, you didn't know what it was going to sound like.
Mm.
You just didn't know. And there's no guitars, no drums. This band, I think they used machines, but it was like traditional power trio. Then we heard Angus Agnes. I spelled this wrong. Why? Agnes Steck, which is a nom de plume for Chris Kroger, Texas Cat, poet, artist, painter, provocateur. And he, his piece there, Drive-In Surf Ninjas. And then we heard Ice House Girl by We Have a Meth Lab.
Yeah.
And then the Philatelist Lament by the Bugs. Which, kind of infamous because liner notes by Richard Meltzer.
Oh, right on.
And Richard was telling me some story about this.
That's
I think they were like the third band. Yeah, two other bands asked him for liner notes and then bunked out on him. So just got, you know, finally on the third, it might be the same notes even.
Yeah, right? Yeah. The work was already done. Just fill in the blanks.
Eric Bloom, the singer of the Blue Oyster Cult, got in touch with me and told him about Prodge with Richard Meltzer coming out. Spielgusher. Mr. Shimmy Mishuko. Oh, she's going to be the drummer for Chiba Mata touring.
Oh, cool.
And they're going to play with the Yellow Magic Orchestra at the Hollywood Bowl.
Wow. In
a couple weeks.
Wow, yeah. Bitchin'. Very cool.
Wild. Yeah, Eric Boom, I got to meet him once. You know, he was at somebody's pad. It was in the 90s. Later 90s, maybe? Or middle 90s? Can't remember for sure, but yeah, you know, I've already met the rhythm section, the Bouchard brothers, Albert and Joe, bass and drum, and in fact got to play with them and stuff. And then here's Eric Bloom, and first thing he tells me is, you know, I wake up in the morning and I put my pants on one leg at a time. And like, yeah, I was like, well, I don't want to hear this. Right? I want to hear about some contraption.
Yeah, I want to see your...
Kind of like flings them in the...
Down the fireman apparatus. The pants getter.
Fireman apparatus. Right? You know, and sticks the mirror shades on, the laser beam wrist rocket.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear one leg out.
I think he's bullshitting you anyway.
Want to know about the pantser.
Pantser. And I hadn't met Buck Dharma or Al Lanier. So there's two of them I still haven't met. But he said he hadn't talked to Richard in a long time, but that'd be trippy for those two cats. Although, you know, talking to Richard, I got to spend the whole afternoon and evening with him last month when I was there in Portland. He ain't that interested in people from the old days. No, he's like a...
going forward?
Yeah. 67 now. Wow. He's an incredible cat, though. I love him. Having trouble with his book. Not writing it. It's wrote.
We're getting it published?
I heard Amazon just started selling more of the Kindle than paper things.
Over there.
So I told Richard, fucking Walt Whitman did it in 1855, self-published. Really ain't in it. Didn't start with punk. It actually goes back. Walt Whitman. So, you know. And then he said, yeah, I've been checking it out. Yeah, I could pick my own paper. And so, you know, there's a little control thing. Nobody's going to edit your shit.
And I think it's so much more common these days than recent years or in previous years.
I think a publisher now is just looking at somebody who's got some tabloid life, like some kind of expose or
something. Right. It's almost like the publishers are going the same way that the record company's gone.
And then, then even if you see the fiction, it's same old, same old. These gothic things or these spy crime things.
Vampires.
And vampires.
Right. And romance.
That's why I was talking about these gothic things.
Jacqueline,
Suzanne. And
It's the same story with different character names again and again.
But the people eat it up.
Yeah, they do.
You know, I remember Kay, her favorite writer was Agatha Christie, mystery. And in England, I saw two of these things. Maybe they were BBC things. They were two different Miss Marples. How she solves the things, you know. They're kind of slow, but putting it together. And I could see why Kay kind of dug on it. But those are kind of like puzzles and stuff, right? You're trying to solve. Oh, Richard, he writes from the gut. It's just too intense for people. I remember he wrote a book for the... his years as a rock writer, in the rock write called Whore Just Like the Rest. And don't pull punches, you know?
I think there's a huge market for that kind of thing.
So do I.
You know? I mean, that's the kind of shit I like to read.
He's a beautiful writer.
Yeah.
Intense. Anyway, one cat, for sure, Brother Twan, that we can count on for not compromising or pulling any shorts, his brother Matt with his face on.
That's right.
Could bring on the full force, undiluted, untainted.
Cool. Well, this we went to this cool festival this past week, Lightning in a Bottle, and heard all kinds of bitchin' music. And so I'm just going to kind of do a little focus on some pretty lights here. That was one of the highlights.
Where was it?
It was down in Silverado Canyon or something like Irvine Lake.
Irvine Lake. It's in the foothills around Irvine. It's a really beautiful piece of land.
Yeah, you never know you're in Irvine. Yeah.
You know what? I think that this ain't no picnic was out there.
Right. Yeah. 4th of July, they used to have the big punk barbecue
picnic thing. And there's some kind of chain and wallet wife beater thing.
Yeah, right? Yeah, they got some rockabilly deal. Right. Yeah, that's used for a lot of different events. It's a really bitchin' spot.
Okay.
So that's what it's about for today.
Yeah. side, get a good feeling, yeah. Side, get a good feeling, yeah. Side, get a good feeling,
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Cool. Thank you.
You gave us a little preview about maybe some inspiration coming from this festival you were just at. But was that all that was to it?
Yeah, that's pretty much all there was there to it. They really had some pretty lights, too. Did you catch all of them? They had crazy
lights. Yeah, I saw pretty lights play at Lightning in the Bottle Festival, which was done by good friends of mine. I used to promote the Lightning in the Bottle when they were just throwing little tiny warehouse parties in L.A. This was just a few years back. I think this one was this the 7th annual?
I think so.
Something like that.
They missed 1 year, 3 years ago, because they didn't have a location that was up to their standards.
Right. I think they'd lost their previous location. It was up in Santa Barbara.
Yeah.
And they found this new spot, which is like out in the Irvine Lake area, and it's really an amazing spot. But, man, they've come a long way, and all... It's a great festival. I mean, anybody who wants to go to a kick-ass festival, every Memorial Day, it's a 4-day festival, lightningthebottle.com. Go check it out. It's amazing.
Kind of like
a couple weeks before that, you guys were Joshua Tree.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. This
Joshua
is kind of like
Music
a
Fest.
Music of Burning Man was one of, like, little subtitles for this festival. So it didn't have nearly the harshness of going out there.
Yeah,
but
and we got some big Burning Man news from the Twan here. Pepe is coming back. Opera Man, or the Burning Man.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to do another Burning Man opera for 2012.
Right.
Which will be 10 years after the last opera we did, which was 2002. And it's also the last year of the Mayan calendar, so that creates kind of a rich... backdrop for artistic creativity, which, you know, Pepe's a sculptor, and so he can invent some pretty amazing things based on that alone, and so it's something we're working on right now. But
well, maybe the calendar figures in that, since it's supposed to be the end of the calendar, maybe that gets all burned up.
Yeah, exactly.
He got a trip too, because the calendar was a disc.
Yeah, kind of like the one on the wall there.
But
next to the heater.
But the New World people never had the wheel. And nobody thought of putting it on an axle. They had it right there. They were looking at it every day.
That's funny. Never thought of that, right? Had a wheel. Didn't realize the relevance there, the
right
importance.
Yeah, it's for the bicycles late in the game. They had chariots with two wheels.
Right.
And no one ever thought of putting one wheel in front of the other.
Right. Crazy,
like,
right?
Like thousands of years.
People carried shit, and they could have been wheeling it.
Yeah, this is a dude that broke out
the
of the box.
Incas built roads, and they were running on them.
Right, right.
It's crazy. Okay,
we came to the end of the second hour here, May 31st, last days of May, 2011, Wild Beaver Show, hold tight for hour three. May 31st, 2011, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show. Thank you.
in Hollywood. We drove up from Pedro. We were fucking corn dogs, man. We'd go get drunk and pogo.
Satisfied that the brightest star. I'm out playing, 'cause I'm inside waiting for you. I felt alive, high, I'm satisfied that the highest high is you. Something you tend to while I'm waiting. I've been saving my love.
Wad from Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with Cohesion. This is a Minuteman tune. Actually, it's a D. Boone tune. D. Boone's solo song on Double Nickels on the Dime. And what you heard there was Delicate Steve, artist from New York City. There was a gig a couple weeks ago at the Bowery Ballroom there in Manhattan where younger people, in tribute to Michael Azarod's Our Band Could Be Your Life book, did songs from the bands that that book talks about.
Oh, cool.
And so Delicate Steve did Minuteman.
Yeah, very cool gig.
And that was him on his own on his guitar doing Cohesion. And then we heard History Lesson Part 2 with guest Lee Rinaldo from Sonic Youth. By the way, Lee's working on a solo album right now. I think Nels Klein just played some on it. Thurston's just came out.
Yeah, with Beck, huh? Beck did it?
Yeah, Beck produced that one. And I think I played something last week from that.
I think so.
And it's different than the other two solo albums he did. And, God, the last time Lee did one was in the 80s. I think every song was on a locked groove. It was called Lee to Infinity or something like that. Yeah, you know, locked grooves, right? Keeps playing and playing and playing, and like each tune... Well, tunes, they were like tones.
Like droning?
Yeah, yeah. You know. Then we heard There and Gone by Kings of Lower Town. And then something new from Ed Vedder called Sad Life. He made an album of him on ukulele.
Oh, wow, cool.
And, yeah. So you're going to be dreaming up this opera.
Yeah, we're in the middle of doing it right now. Well, the opera, the Burning Man opera, has turned into. We've got some friends and new friends and old involved, who weren't so much interested in just doing one more opera at Burning Man, as they were interested in developing this into a touring road show. So now we've got these teams of people, some of which have produced events and festivals like the Earth Dance Festival. A lot of people know about that. And the Earth Dance happens, I think it's like in 130 different cities around the country. I mean, around the world.
Yeah.
So we got some Earth Dance people have a new project called Push for Peace. And they loved what we were doing with the Burning Man Opera, and so now we're kind of like working with them to develop this road show, which would be like a ritual theater. We want to create like an immersive, visceral, transformational experience for people so they're not just going to another show and really blurring the line between audience and performer so that we're all the performers.
Like no spectators.
Yeah, sort of like that. So we haven't come up with what that is yet, but the people that are involved, like Christopher Fueling, the director I work with from the Burning Man Operas, and Christopher also runs the Art Monastery in Italy. He's got a website for that. Just look up Art Monastery and you'll find it.
Oh, speaking of which,
yeah,
is there a a site on the web that talks about this new?
No, not yet.
This news, so it's all kind of under
No, we're in the formulation phase right now, and we had a donor give us a little bit of upfront seed money to develop develop what it is we're doing. But I've got full confidence in the people that I've worked with that we come up with is going to be a fucking stellar.
You
got to
tell me in the future, though, so because people want to know more about this thing, they know where to go.
Well, you know, I have the Burning Man Opera website that'll give you some of the background of what we've done in the past.
Let's name that site.
It's burningmanopera.org or .com. It don't matter. Yeah. And eventually we'll put stuff up on that site for this. We'll probably also develop a whole new site for the new project.
Okay.
And who knows? You know, it's a tall order. I don't know if we'll be able to pull it off.
You're talking about something that moves beyond this 2012 Burning Man event. It's going
to... Yeah. It's almost like Burning Man happens later in the year, and what we'd like to do is start touring, like, by March of next year.
Yeah.
So that Burning Man, the performance that we do at Burning Man, the Burning Man Opera, will be just one of the stops on the tour.
Right, right.
But it'll also be like a standalone, because what the tour would entail is a 60-foot or a 90-foot dome with these crazy, high-tech, never-seen-before visuals that are projected on the dome. That we would take on the tour. But that won't be out at Burning Man. What we would do at Burning Man is what we used to do at the operas, with Pepe building one of his sculptures, and we do a big performance, and then we torch the sculpture at the end.
Right, right.
So it'll be a standalone, but for all intents and purposes, it is one stop on the tour. So we'll see how it all turns out. I'm excited about it, and if we can pull it off, I'll be ecstatic. We'll see. It's going to be painful, though.
Like they say,
it's like anything worth doing isn't without its struggle. You know what I mean? So we're in the middle of all that right now. So we'll see.
I am intrigued, Brother Twan. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I'll keep you in the loop.
Okay, some more tunage.
Eagle of an eye, when do or die is the game. I apply. You have not forgotten. For you have now chosen. I am not your conscience. I have said nothing. You just speak of nonsense. Let the joys life can bring. I am quick to your every trick. As if my only kick is watching you tick. You are not forgotten. You have now chosen. I am sly with an eagle of an eye. When do or die is the game I apply. I am quick to your every trick. As if my only kick is watching you tick, tick. You are not forgotten.
From Pedro Show. Let's see, you just heard something from a band that Greg Norton was in. Greg Norton, a Husker Du bass player, which reminds me of Grant Hart, Husker drummer, and buddy of his, Charlie Plymel, and buddy of his, Roxy Powell, both 75-year-old cats.
Cool.
Came to Pedro.
Wow.
Yeah, last week I gave him a tour. And, yeah, it was happening. Actually, Roxy was Merchant Marine, you know, this is 40, 50 years ago, but he remembers Wilmington. Yeah. And Charlie was a longshoreman, but up in Alameda Bay Area. But they got to see the town, and I took them through the whole trip. It was all days until their feet were bloody stumps. I showed as much as I could.
Nice.
Walkers had sandwiches and chowed them by the trailer park next to Royal Palms.
Cool.
And there was ravens right there using the
they like
from
to
the
play
cliffs
there.
And just hanging.
Yeah, they like to play there.
Nanny's raising one.
Yeah, so she said.
I was over there this morning, man. I mean, it's this big. And wow. The inside of the mouse is still pink and stuff. It's still a baby, but the almost all black on, except for the mouth.
Wow.
And, talks to her and stuff. bites on her, you know, she's got talons. Like, uh-huh. She also's got some Sea Bright Bantam rooster heads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, these guys are like silver and black outline. They look like stained glass, like a Tiffany lamp roosters and hens. In fact, they're kind of close. They're not such a big difference. Yeah, and of course she's raising them in her pad. And these guys are 3 days old.
Wowee.
And this raven, his name's Neo, man, he's coming along. And, you know, ravens, they're smarter than chimps. I mean, and dolphins. These guys are like, they're supposedly way up there. And, yeah. I've seen them. I see how they... Most animals got to spend their whole day getting chow, you know. They think ravens maybe 15, 20%. 80% of the time they're playing.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You know, they're like...
They get a good meal on and then it's go time.
Yeah, and then she gave me a little history lesson because they go back all the way. They're in the Egypt and with the mummies.
Yeah,
in
mythology.
There.
You find it all over the place.
They've been existing with mankind and it keeps evolving together. They keep learning new tricks. And
yeah. Also, with wolves. There's a link of ravens with wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because they'll eat carrion.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. They're not picky.
They're not like a raptor.
Yeah.
So they'll go after, and so that's why they're following the wolves. Where the scraps are.
Yeah.
So they got a symbiotic thing going with them a long time ago.
Right.
It's trippy about them, man. Mm. And, here Nanny's living with them.
Here's the thing on YouTube. You see them, like, tumbling down the snowy hill. They're just having fun. It's
they'll taunt other birds.
Yeah. I see them up there every afternoon with the red-tailed hawks.
And them, too. They're kind of a buzzard. But there's something else. I've got a new appreciation. I know a lot of people think of them as bad luck and kind of evil or some portent. Actually, they're beautiful, man.
Yeah.
That black.
Smart.
Their feet, their eyes, everything. Their beaks. This dude's beak is so big. I want to ask you, Brother Twan, about one of these operas you had in the preparation. But I got a little more tunes. I got some. Melvin's got a brand new live album out, so I want to play some of that. Because we're near the end of the show. We come back.
Thank you. a lack of halfway does. But it's no matter. I say I can't.
Walking in circles around the room.
Watt from Pedro Show. Last music for this edition. Something new from Boris called Party Boy. Yeah, they got Watta singing on this album. It's trippy. And the name of their band comes from a Melvin song called Boris. And that's what we heard after that. Melvin's have a new live album, and we heard Boris. And then finally, a band called German Error Message with I Washed the Dirt Off. German Error Message.
Clean.
All the names to think of a band.
Yeah, right. I just worked, last week I worked with a German band on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. I was doing lighting on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, and they had, Rammstein.
I did the Australia tour with the Stooges, the big day out with them cats.
Yeah.
And when I was coming off stage, he'd be coming, the main man with the apron.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd be coming up.
Yeah.
And I remember one gig, maybe Adelaide or Melbourne or something. I go, man, give it to him. And he goes, I will.
Yeah.
They were kind of a trip. I mean, the music was kind of, you know, kind of a metal with some dance.
Yeah.
Into it.
Yeah, yeah.
But kind of a spectacle.
Well, they do a lot of fire gags.
A lot of humor, too.
Yeah, oh, it's funny.
Making fun of this whole German kind of
drum.
They're having fun with their gig. I watched the whole gig.
I enjoyed it. They just played five songs for the Jimmy Kimmel Show, two of which ended up on the TV.
Okay.
Because
he has you play in the back.
So yeah, they play in the back, exactly.
And he's sitting on a couch.
Yeah.
They had couches on the side.
Yeah, yeah.
You know where I first met him? He was on the K-Rock Love thing. Love Line. People would call up.
Right.
Problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, very heavy. Yeah. I don't know if I could do that show.
Right.
These young people, you could tell, were hurt.
Yeah, right.
He ain't going to, like, make jokes.
That's probably the best time to make some
jokes.
That's
where I met him. He was... Jimmy Kimmel, nice cat.
Yeah, he is. He's cool, too, man. He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
He's not all up
and
on a high horse.
That. He remembered when I came up there.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that Steve Jones is on K-Rock now.
On
Sunday night.
Huh.
I got to hear.
Yeah.
I haven't listened yet.
I think he might have a show on Sirius on the satellite radio, too.
That, too?
I think so. I think there's some punk guy that's got... I think Steve Jones comes
to
mind.
You know, he had that one here for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And he was great.
Yeah.
And I got to be on the show.
He
had me jam with him.
Yeah.
He said, if you're going to come on, you better bring your bass.
Uh-huh.
He did All Right Now.
Yeah.
Kind of the end part. TVI.
Yeah.
And he goes, look, you have a flannel. We got to do Creedence. So we did Born on the Bayou. And that's when Georgie was at the end. He goes over, right? That show's supposed to end. He goes, no, keep playing.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Georgie finally shows up with the bongos.
Uh-huh.
But Steve Jones, sharp cat.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's been sober a long time. I guess he had problems at some point. And
he told me coming up from working people. You know, he's not from rich family.
Yeah, right.
But he, having cat, I really enjoyed being on with him. He's much different than a rock jock or something.
Yeah, right.
And trippy kind of thing he told me. He said, you know, a little bit about Sex Pistols. He said, we should have done it like you guys. Like no roadies.
Uh-huh.
That's what he told me.
Yeah.
Brother Twan, I wanted to ask you about this prep that you did for
the Burning Man Opera.
Yeah, this one where you wanted to get into voodoo.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing with the all of the operas, they were always based on some ancient culture's traditions, whether known or invented. Right? And, like, you know, one of the operas was based in Sumerian, with a Sumerian backdrop.
Sure.
Sagat,
I think is the name of their pyramids.
Or Ziggurat?
Ziggurat.
Yeah.
Sagat, I think, is a fucking restaurant.
It's a review. It's a
chowder.
Right, exactly. Which is a good one, at that. But for the operas, it was always based on these old traditions, and all the operas are based on a ritual model. Like there's five stages to ritual, and I don't remember off the top of my head what they are. Even though I work with them all the time, I have a hard time retaining information sometimes. So we always incorporate these five stages of ritual into what the performance is going to be, and so. for the 1999 opera, Pepe Ozan, the founder of the opera and the artist behind the opera, he was always intrigued with voodoo. So we decided for our research we needed to go to Haiti and study voodoo. But for the year prior to going to Haiti, we did loads of research. And the opera's director, Christopher Fuelling, he's a super intelligent guy. He's a scholar, anthropologist, MFA. So he always studied anthropology, not to become a scholar in anthropology, but to use the knowledge of anthropology and apply it to the fine arts. And he's really amazing talking to him. Like, he can cross-reference which cultures and which points in time they borrowed from different gods and goddesses and which ones relate to the other ones. Like, Aphrodite is also, you know, the goddess of love, but is also the... You know, and I can't speak intelligently about it because I'm not trained in that, but Christopher could just, like, riff on that stuff. It's all on the top of his head. So Pepe, for 1999, wanted to do this this opera and base it on voodoo, so we decided that we should go to Haiti. And this is after a year of studying voodoo at libraries with Christopher. And studying in libraries with Christopher is like, you know, that's like having my own private professor. You know, and we put together what we called our voodoo field guide. And so we learned all about the different voodoo gods, the spirits. They're called loas. And so we went down there with a good knowledge base about voodoo. And we were told by so-called experts before we went down there that because we're white people, once we go down there to try to get involved with voodoo ceremonies, because we're white, and that's such a poor country, we will be seen as rich people, and we won't get anything authentic. We'll get something that they put on for us in order to try to get money out of us at best, right? But what they didn't realize, these experts telling us these things, was that, you know, Pepe's an amazing world traveler, and he's like a chameleon, and he can get in anywhere. So Pepe got to Haiti a week before I did, and then Christopher showed up a week after I did. By the time I got there, Pepe'd already made friends with this voodoo priestess, and who took him up into the hills above Jacmel, Haiti, which is known for its white magic, you know, and like benevolent voodoo, where you have to trek across a river to get up into the hills into this voodoo community. And so he met the voodoo priest in charge up there, and then by the time I got there, I started going on these journeys to meet them and everything. And we told the voodoo priest what we were up to. We were going to do this big performance of which thousands of people were going to see and probably learn a thing or two about voodoo. And he was impressed with our knowledge of voodoo and what we were trying to do. So he suggested that we go through an actual initiation. It's called a Kanzo ceremony. And when you go through a Kanzo ceremony, when you come out at the other end, it's a seven day process. When you come out the other end, you're a voodoo priest. So we made those arrangements, and then Christopher flew in, and the day after he came there, we went up to this voodoo community where we started this this process. But the funny thing is that they speak a Creole down there in Haiti. And Pepe speaks French, but he had a hard time understanding it. I mean, he did well with it, but there's some words that are kind of mashed up that he didn't really understand. So when we set up this ceremony, the voodoo priest said that he used the word seminaire, which we took to mean a seminar. So we thought we were just going to go up to this voodoo community, the three of us, and he was going to give us a seminar about voodoo. So we thought we were just going to, it was going to be like a class. What we didn't realize is it was this involved ceremony where, it's a long story, just to shorten it up, we were sequestered for 7 days and seven nights in a 12-foot by 12-foot concrete shack where we couldn't leave that shack. And they did crazy voodoo ceremonies. They did throughout the week in our honor. They would come into our shack randomly and perform these rituals. One of which was an animal sacrifice. They sacrificed a chicken where they behead the chickens and they put the blood of the chickens all over our bodies. It was fucking wild, man, and sometimes pretty scary because you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere in Haiti, and they would blindfold us. Like, there would be a raging voodoo ceremony, and they would bring us front and center, and the whole community is out, a couple hundred people standing around, drums are beating, there's the singers are singing, and people get possessed in voodoo ceremonies. That's part of the deal, is like, they get mounted. They call the spirits come down from their spirit realm, and the way they come, they manifest themselves is by, they choose somebody in the congregation who becomes that voodoo spirit. So they become possessed. And so we have possessions happening all around us, and we're standing in the middle of all this pandemonium. And then all of a sudden, from behind us, blindfolds would be put on us. And I'm thinking, oh, great, here's the part where they sacrifice the white man to their voodoo gods, you know. And, of course, it didn't turn out that way. So all those fears were just, you know, generated internally in the fear centers of my brain. But when we came out of that seven-day ceremony, we were like, so I'm a bona fide voodoo priest. But, you know, I have a problem with any kind of religion and religious thought, anything with dogma involved. I kind of put my running shoes on and go the other way. But the best lesson we learned out of the experience was that voodoo, like all religion, it's just a manipulation of mystery. You know, it's like and like death. People are afraid of death, and the things that you can't put an answer on. This is where religion's always been great. They just kind of corral people in based on the not knowing, right? So we realize it's the manipulation of mystery, which became the seed of what we were going to create that year's opera out of. It's like we're just manipulating mystery. So even though I am a voodoo priest, I don't practice it because, you know, I don't buy in. But the experience was phenomenal. But this is the kind of thing that we do for the operas. I mean, the previous operas, Pepe and Christopher, went to Crete to do a bunch of research on that Minoan culture, you know. And they did a bunch of, they went on trips. I wasn't on those trips, like to India they a couple of times. So all of these operas were always based on the intensive research.
It was foundation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. So
I can't wait. I can't wait.
So we're planning on doing that with this Maya thing for next year's opera. We're planning some trips down to the pyramids with some experts with us to guide us through. So
righteous.
Yeah, could be
a cool thing. Can't wait.
Yeah. So, well, I'll keep you in the loop on it.
On that journey.
Yeah, man. Thank
you. Matt, thanks so much. Hey, you
can sandbag on one and talk on another.
Whoa. Somebody came through. Remember those? What were they called? CB radios.
Yeah. Really? That's what that was? Will that come through on the
broadcast? Right there.
Wow.
You got some other Pedro guests. Brother Twan, thanks for coming in and enlightening us all to the happenings of these Burning Man situation.
Thanks for having
me. Just your presence, man. Period.
Oh, I always have fun when I show up here. It's always great. Thanks for letting me be here.
No problem. Everybody, it's been May 31st, and came the last days of May, 2011. Wild for Pedro show. I'll do a show next week, and then I got to sally forth on another Stooges tour late. But so next Tuesday, you see you, Brother Matt.
Cool.
Yeah. So everybody out there, keep your powder dry.